Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined by Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza. We are... It's November already.
Yeah.
I don't know quite how it got there. We did decide, we were kind of talking about what we wanted to do. We're taking the seasonal route. And we wanted, you know, Thanksgiving is weirdly right around the corner.
Yeah.
So we're kind of approaching this seasonally with ideas about feasting, family, and gratitude.
Yeah. That's awesome. One of my favorite months, like November.
There's a lot of goods.
It's sort of a little bit of a calm to it.
Yeah.
You know, after even the excitement of all the colors of the other parts of fall. I mean, some people don't like the bare trees, but there's something has its own sort of beauty.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think at least lately, I don't know if it's just this year, but it's still very pleasant outside.
It is.
I mean, there are some days, at least lately, it's been very, very nice to be walking and, you know, catching the last bit of glow.
The color and the
light is so beautiful through the trees.
Yep.
Yes. So I'm going to start out with some cookbooks. As a nonfiction selector, I have the joy of purchasing cookbooks for the library. It's always been one of my personal favorite subject areas, so that makes it doubly fun for me. And sometimes it takes me a while to get the ones I'm looking for, and a lot do release in the fall. So one that I'd like to start out with is called I Am From Here by Vishwesh Bhatt, Stories and Recipes from a Southern Chef. And Vishwesh grew up in the city of Ahmedabad in the state of Gujarat in India. It is actually the state and city where Gandhi set up his ashram. And he grew up in a very large extended family in a 3-bedroom flat. He had, at one point in time, 11 people living there. And it was a really close-knit, loving family, multi-generational. Mm-hmm. And he has a lot of memories of going to the market and buying all these wonderful fresh foods with his father, learning about how to pick the best spices, you know, all the best ingredients. And then his mother cooked for the entire family, and he was the youngest. So he was the little one that was kind of at her feet, and he learned from her, and he helped her with all the preparations. So he has all these beautiful memories of that. Well, the family ends up moving to the United States, and he ends up settling in Oxford, Mississippi.
Wow.
And I'm going to read something really brief from the book. I don't always do that, but I think it's so perfect. It's in the introduction. He says, "I want people to see me as I see myself. An immigrant, a son of immigrants, who chose to make the South his home, and in doing so became a Southern chef. I claim the American South, and this is my story."
Nice.
So there's a lot of lovely story, a lot of great information about ingredients, about rice, about beans, okra, about both of the traditions of okra in India and in the American South, and some fantastic, basically fusion recipes of Southern and traditional Indian food. And I like to bring up just a few. He has his mother's mom's rice pudding in here.
Ooh.
He has a really unique sandwich called Bombay Toasties, sort of like a spin. It's his mother's recipe on almost like a grilled cheese, but it's with potato and spices.
Hmm.
Sweet tea brined fried chicken. Now, he grew up vegetarian, but he actually learned from other Southern chefs how to cook meat, how to prepare meat, how to learn about meat. So this is a beautiful book that, again, is a lot of great information plus wonderful recipes. So that is I Am From Here.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just wonderful. And you know how much I love rice, and it's filled with wonderful rice dishes, so that's pretty cool too. A Good Day to Bake is my second book, Simple Baking Recipes for Every Mood by Benjamina Ebuhi. And Benjamina was on the British Bake Off in 2016. She was one of the finalists. And this book is absolutely beautiful. It's just stunning. It's kind of those understated photographs, sort of a flat finish to them. But what I love about this book is it seems very, very approachable. And it's filled with recipes that include herbs, has recipes that have tea in them, and a lot of just fruits. So very earthy, I would say. And a few of the recipes that really stood out to me are an Earl Grey orange and white chocolate tray bake. I love those tray bakes that they make in England. A mint and lemon drizzle cake. And a simple cupboard cake, which is a very basic chocolate cake that looks like you could make this possibly this weekend without a lot of new ingredients, and also a very simple pound cake too. So that's just a few, but there are just many beautiful recipes in here that seem like something you could really just do on a weekend and pick up and make, that feature a lot of ingredients from nature, essentially.
Very cool. Well, I'm going to follow that with a cookbook as well. This is one I'd heard about a couple of different times and finally got a hold of. Just came out. It's Ghetto Gastro Presents Black Power Kitchen by John Gray, Pierre Serrao, and Lester Walker. They are the group behind Ghetto Gastro, which is a Bronx-based culinary collective. They're called a lot of different things. It's a gorgeous cookbook by itself. It's very stark in some ways. It's the white wording on black cover, but then the ends of the papers are red, so it's sort of eye-catching that way. But once you get inside it, it's a blend of a cookbook, it's a blend of social justice history, it's including the way food has been weaponized in disenfranchised communities. Again, Ghetto Gastro's out of the Bronx. It's a culinary collective, but they pull for inspiration from visual arts, music, fashion, and social activism to curate experiences with food. It features the recipes, it features conversations with influential figures, like activists, artists, writer Thelma Golden, writer and documentarian Dream Hampton, who was the executive director of Surviving R. Kelly, Emery Douglas, who was an early artist, and then later Minister of Culture for the Black Panther Party. And what they were really looking at in there was the breakfast programs that the Black Panthers put on for Black children. And there's a chapter that's devoted to mothers and Black women, and they interview their mothers in the process in one section of it. Because it's the Bronx, it's a culinary crossroads. There's a lot going on. So it's fusion. It's Southern, it's fusion, so you've got African influence, Caribbean influence, Portugal, South America, Chinese, Southeast Asian, and more. It's also very, the majority of it is plant-based, versus there's a couple of chicken dishes, a couple of fish dishes, but it's really very purposely, and they explain at the beginning why, but it's very purposely mostly plant-based. Particularly when you're talking about communities that have trouble are food deserts, you have trouble getting a hold of different ingredients. They talk about that, and that's part of what they're trying to change. Standout things: there's a jollof rice recipe, there's a curry chickpeas recipe. I had been a little confused because I had been showing Cheryl some of the pictures, and there was a General Tso's, so I was thinking it was a chicken dish, but General Tso's is usually sort of a breaded fried chicken type thing. Mm-hmm. This is actually a breaded cauliflower that they had roll in the Tso's sauce, and it looks lovely. A lot of plantain dishes, a lot of lentils, a lot of rice dishes. It's just quite a variety and really interesting. So that's when I was excited to kind of add into the feasting portion of this.
Sounds great.
Sounds neat. Well, this time of year, all throughout the year, really, I am just always interested in seeing new picture books that feature, all the holidays around this time of year, especially as we think about Thanksgiving. And what I am recommending today is it's a nonfiction book in the form of a picture book. It's Harvest Days, Giving Thanks Around the World by Kate DePalma. It is illustrated by Martina Peluso. And the reason I like it, I mean, we have a lot of these types of books where you look at cultures from all over the world. They're always very popular. It doesn't matter when they were published. You usually find them checked out around this time of year, especially when you're looking at food celebrations and harvest-type celebrations or seasons. This book is like a picture book that would have your typical rhyming sections to it, but it features 12 cultures from around the world, 11 countries, And each page has, you know, the rhyming section. You get a little bit of pronunciation of, I know, how to say the celebration in that particular country. I think one of the things that was unique about this book is that it features countries that you don't always see, you know, being singled out for their celebrations or Thanksgiving type seasons, countries like Iran, Korea, Liberia. That was really, really interesting. There's also a section on Algonquin culture, which I thought was really neat, harvest festivals and celebrations. So the end of the book, you get a lot of really interesting back matter on just how, you know, the celebrations are not just obviously at this time of year, but throughout the year related to harvest time. So, yeah, I really enjoyed reading that.
Yeah. Very cool.
Sounds really lovely. I love those. As a parent, I feel like they're really educational. You know, it seems like kids get so much out of these, and you sit down and you learn so much, and then you learn so much yourself. So that's wonderful. Okay. This one's going to go a little bit in a funny direction.
That's okay. We're jagging around a
little
bit.
Yeah, I'm going like backwards. Okay, so I think a lot of poets have sort of a quintessential poem. This is very arguable. But one that you see about the poet W.S. Merwin, you see it posted, I think, the most, is his poem called Thanks. And I don't know if either of you have seen that or out and about, but it is a beautiful poem, sort of a complicated poem in some ways to think about because it's thanking for really difficult things. It's really thankful for being alive, essentially. So to me, the sort of quintessential Merwin poem, and I'm a lover of M.S. Merwin all around. He did die in 2019. And so when I saw, actually one of my colleagues pointed this out to me, that this was purchased by Mari. The poem Forest, it's a picture book, a nonfiction picture book about Merwin. Poet W.S. Merwin and the Palm Tree Forest He Grew from Scratch by Carrie Fountain and illustrated by Chris Turnham. And this is a wonderful biographical picture book about William Stanley, or W.S. Merwin, and about his childhood growing up in the city. He loved nature, but he was pretty removed from it. And he kept seeing development around him. And then those natural areas that he knew about became developed more. In that time, he developed his career as a poet. He ended up becoming the Poet Laureate of the United States. He's had this large career in poetry. But he craved the wild. And he really craved wild in poetry. That's why he loved poetry so much. He loved the wildness of it. And he didn't want to live in a developed place. He wanted to live where it was wild. So he finally got to the point in his life where he moved to Maui, and he purchased a piece of land, and it was actually it had been damaged by humans. It was considered a wasteland. It was affordable for that reason. He purchases this land, and he sits with it. And he feels that he can make it wild again, and he starts planting palms. He ends up collecting palms from really all over the world and creating this huge palm forest, which is now a conservancy that he gave before he died. And it continues on as a nature conservancy. So it's really about that love of the wild and how he turned that into something tangible in planting a forest, but about... I love that link between the love of the wild in the poetry and the love of the wild in nature. So just a wonderful introduction to W.S. Merwin for children. And there is a wonderful poem that is, Thanks is not really a child-friendly poem, but the one at the end of the book is called The Palm, and it is child-friendly. And of course, it was a wonderful author's note for kids to learn about Merwin as well. Very so cool. A beautiful book, The Palm Forest.
Okay.
Very nice.
I'm also kind of loosely staying within theme. my next book is actually, I wanted to get a good fiction book in here, and this is just a fun, light romance. It's called The Romance Recipe by Ruby Barrett. It's a smart, queer, feminist romance about a type A read control freak restaurant owner. And her very grumpy head chef who has done a spin in reality TV, not really found it for her, lost her passion for cooking, but was able to spin that into getting this TED's chef position, where she thought she would have a little bit more control and, you know, be able to get back her passion for cooking. But Amy is a little bit overbearing and wants control of everything, including her kitchen, even though she is not the head chef. And Sophie is a little bit curmudgeonly because she wants control of her kitchen. The restaurant is not doing well. The pair of them are noticing each other, but they don't want anybody to know that, except everybody does, because that's the way life works. And they're trying to figure out a way to save the restaurant when, of course, reality TV comes knocking again. They have the opportunity to try and spotlight the restaurant, Amy and May, and they decide to take it, but they have to make some have to come to a truce, and they have to make some choices about the restaurant and their relationship. So it's just it's a nice, interesting take on a romance story with a food twist, and it was fun.
Awesome. Nice. Well, I do have two more sort of picture books. The first one is another nonfiction title. It's Giving Thanks, How Thanksgiving Became a National Holiday by Denise Kiernan. And the pictures are by Jamie Kristoff. And this was something that was really interesting to me because I couldn't say, like, off the top of my head, do I know how Thanksgiving started as a national holiday? Well, Sarah Josepha Buell Hale, someone who born in the late 1700s and lived in the 1800s mostly, was an American writer, an activist, something I didn't know, the author of the nursery rhyme Mary Had a Little Lamb. She is the one who kind of petitioned for years with Abraham Lincoln and others to make Thanksgiving a national holiday. This is a beautifully illustrated story, just kind of focusing on not just the woman, but how the role of gratitude kind of became a focal point of the holiday. It was really interesting to read about the implementation, really, of Thanksgiving. For example, you know, that tradition that we have of pardoning the turkey in the White House. I don't pay attention too much to that, but it actually has a little bit of its roots in one of Abe Lincoln's sons, Tad, who was known to be a little bit rambunctious and eventually somehow or another got a turkey in the house as a pet and was running around, and then the family decided to, well, it's time to say goodbye. We're going to eat the turkey. And he was like, he's such a good turkey. I mean, it's just kind of like he's a good guy. I just had to laugh. But anyway, this book really, I think, gives you a good taste of how it really is rooted in history and how we came to celebrate Thanksgiving. The other book that I have, this was just beautiful, and I know I'm not going to do justice to the title. Keep Unamuk. Weamachun's Thanksgiving Story. This is written by actually three authors, Danielle Greendeer, Anthony Perry, and Alexis Bunton, illustrated by Gary Meeches Sr. It is a picture book, and it's kind of not really the Thanksgiving story that I dare say we might have heard when we were in school.
Right.
I think it's a little more truthful or true to the narrative of, you know, that when the story is told from a Native perspective, First Peoples might view Thanksgiving as a day of mourning, mm-hmm. because it was a time when the settlers coming over introduced a lot of, you know, illness, practices, you know, like taking things that didn't belong to you, things into their culture. And so it's not... it's not a downer by any means, but I feel like it was very balanced, I guess you could say. And what I really liked is that, you know, it's a grandma and her two children who are going through you know, all these things that are in their community, and they're talking about, you know, what was the first Thanksgiving like? Well, we call it Kipunimich, the time of harvest, and this is what really happened. And they go through, you know, both some good stories and some, she goes through some good stories and some not so pleasant stories about the introduction of that community and the white person settler coming, and you know, the relationships that started to form. What I really liked is at the very end, you get to see a picture of the real Maple and Quill. So these are the children that are featured in the book. It's a picture book's fiction. But there are two children who the book is based on, and the grandma. They live in Mashpee, Massachusetts. So it's just a beautiful, beautiful book. And there's also a little recipe at the end on how to make, let's see if I can pronounce this correctly, Wampanoag recipe. It's cornmeal and dried berries, walnuts, sunflower seeds, water, and some maple syrup. So yeah, those are two really beautiful books to check out this season.
Lovely. Yeah. All right, and I think I'm closing out. I do not want to be accused of pushing past Thanksgiving to skip to Christmas. I'm actually, but I am about to talk about a book which technically probably is a Christmas book. But I'm pulling it out because I think it delivers a message that I kind of want to see delivered daily, but definitely anytime we're gathering and feasting. And this one kind of appealed to my genealogist heart as much as a family history lover, as much as just for the story and the art. It is May Your Life Be Deliciosa by Michael Genhart and illustrated by Lawrence Laura. Sorry. It is a book that sort of, it's a family who's gathering, and it's a child who's telling the story in parts, but they're gathering to assemble tamales for the feast. And in that process, the grandmother tells them her wishes for them, tells stories of their family. In the pictures, you see, you know, family represented in pictures on the tables, in memories the grandmother's having, you know, thinking back of when she was married, and thinking about the important things that what's important in life that people should be looking for. It's just a family story. It's so important to kind of encourage people to share their stories, to share the experience of working in a kitchen together if you can swing it. Because you just, I mean, it's a love letter to the community in preparation for a feast, to the families that get, you know, getting together, a family, and shared stories. And it's ultimately for the two, for the author and the illustrators, it's a love letter to Michael Zabuela Laura's abuelitas, respectively, and really any grandmother who's passing on their love through recipes and the stories. And it is one of those very clearly, it's sort of like, I do not measure, mm-hmm. you know, that you in my head, in the back, I'm thinking, yep, never a measuring spoon around. No, I measure with my, you know, I measure with my heart. I measure with my, right. There's a lovely line in there of it, but it goes to every person I've ever heard who's tried to get a recipe out of a family member.
Right.
You'll know.
It doesn't appeal to my insecure senses in the kitchen when I'm trying to do something. But
no, but
I
it's
love
so
that
real, isn't it?
Last year, it was just beautiful, and it. I don't know. For me, it evoked a lot of like family memories of doing things together like that, and tamale making is pretty labor intensive, so it was nice to see that story.
And not having a tamale assembly line in my family, it really felt, when I was reading it, I very, very much felt the way we did getting ready for Thanksgiving at my grandmother's house in Detroit.
Yep.
Southern grandmother, big giant spread. So that and Dad would help cook, and I would be in the kitchen, and so it really was. And my aunts were in the kitchen, and my uncles would be in and out helping or not helping. Yeah. You know, it's sort of it that's what it evoked, and I think that's just a cool memory for me.
Yeah, so. Sounds beautiful.
We hope you enjoy the holidays, whichever ones you celebrate. But be together in community whenever you can, and come back and listen to us later.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you.
Happy reading.
Happy reading. Happy feasting.